everyone. Welcome back to the fire. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you all are well. The episode I've got lined up for you today is a bit different from what I've done in the past. This time I've got a panel of participants, or rather, a few folks sitting around the coffee table. I apologize in advance for the audio quality of this one. There is a thunderstorm that kicked up right as soon as we started, so there wasn't really anything I could do about that. Part of the focus of this podcast is to show the microcosms that exist inside a region that is generally stereotyped as being backwards. So today I sit down with a few folks who grew up here in the South but don't necessarily identify as Southerners as their primary form of a heritage. We've all had exposure to some degree to a non-local and ever-changing territory technology and the norms that have been brought on by it. I'm going to be referencing a lot of charts, surveys, computer usage, and internet usage over the past few decades, and I'm going to be linking all that in the show notes so you can check in and verify all that. I like to think about this kind of stuff, and I've spent some time listening to folks like Robert Anton Wilson, Terence McKenna, Buckminster Fuller, and various other futurists. You know, I enjoy listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, and he certainly tends to go on some futurist bends every now and then. You know, I've read futurist and primitive literature in the past, because I don't like to keep all my eggs in one basket. We don't know what the future holds, but we take another step towards it every day, and it's like we're walking backwards and we're unable to see where we're going, or even where we're at. And what we do see in the past is distorted. I like the analogy of a bird learning to fly, like, you know, mother bird pushes baby bird out of the nest, and baby bird's gotta learn to fly, or it's going to hit the ground. And feels like, collectively, humanity is reaching that point. We're about to have to learn to fly, or we're gonna hit the ground. Regardless of whether or not you are, you know, futurist or primitivist, technology is going to play a role in the future, and we are going to decide what that role is going to be, whether or not it's incorporated into our lives, or if we reject it, or what forms of technology. In a few decades, technology has affected us in ways that we never could have imagined. So where will it lead us in the next 10, 20, 30 years? So, I like to project, or predict, if you will. I'm not going to claim I know. It's more like, you know, intuitive, or, it's like I feel like this might could be, you know, how things could be, or rather, I feel like things could be this way or that. And so, it's like, you know, because one or two changes in any area of life can or could lead to a cascading series of events. When projecting forward, there's no wrong ideas. I think any imagined scenario can help inform our understanding of the past, present, and future. So, I throw some ideas out there in this episode, and most of them get shut down pretty fast, and that's fine. That's being realistic. But I think it's a good thought experiment to suspend momentarily certain notions and concepts we find that we cannot see ourselves living without or outside of because condition. Like, we know we're experiencing it every day. It's hard to imagine ourselves outside of it. But, you know, if you look back several hundred years, and examine the philosophies and concepts and ideas of people of a different time, I'm sure you would find that there are certain things that we have given up since then, or you know, flip-flop or changed our notions of what is proper or right. So anyways, there's no way we can know what's going to change in the future and what's going to stay the same. All we can attempt to do is anticipate and prepare ourselves and try to influence, do what we can in the now to, have an effect further down the line. So, on that note, gonna end this here and get us to the episode. See you on the other side. So, welcome back to the fire. This is going to be a little bit different. I've got several people sitting around my phone today. We're going to have a conversation about sort of like internet culture and video games and how they've like influenced us or how we perceive them and where it fits in within our culture and society. So, I don't know if we want to start on the left or right.
You guess first.
Am I new? Oh, okay.
All right, so yeah, just say your name and then sort of like, I guess, your first experiences with either like a computer or a game and like, I guess, how you've come to interact and know that medium.
Sure. Yeah, well, my name is Seth Wells. That's Thunder. Pleasure to be here. So my first experiences, I was probably 4 or 5 when my parents got their first NES for the family. That was an experience. I started with Duck Hunt and Super Mario Bros., which I assume was pretty typical back then. And yeah, that's my introduction that led me here.
Hi, my name is Nabi. I think the first time I can really remember playing with a computer, I was probably like, how old was I? I don't know, maybe like 10 or 11 or something. I think I had a Packard Bell that I would play on, my dad had, and I would just kind of play on it. And I just began to kind of, it had like Windows 3.0 or something on it, and I just began to kind of play around with the operating system and just kind of learn how the file structure and thing works. I remember I had a game, it was like a Spider-Man Cartoon Maker game that I used to play. I was probably a lot younger than 10. I can't remember exactly how old I was, but I remember distinct memories of playing around with that computer.
Hi, I'm Kel. Let's see, I have had a gaming system, well, at least access to one. My grandmother bought an NES when she retired, and, you know, as she was taking care of us, we were raised around him playing it. I have been chastised often because of how often I played that NES. And we got our first computer about when I was age 7, so, well, I don't know, about 1990. Yeah, about 1996, 1997, and I've had a pretty interesting life on the computer and internet, and as well as certainly in video games. That's me.
Alright, so now we're back to me, Kylie. Some of my earliest memories are like with my dad's Atari, I think 5700, playing like Pac-Man, Pole Position, and like Tanks, and yeah, there's a couple other ones, but yeah, then getting like the NES and Sega, and then got like 64, GameCube, and yeah, like first computer, I think was like Nabi had a Windows, like it was a version prior to like 95. I think it might have been 3 something, but like I can remember playing like a game called like Block Man, and like everything operated through like the DOS. Like you had to like put in the floppy, and then like you know, like D:// like execute program something .exe, and like game starts up.
Yeah.
And yeah, like then when we got like a 98, I remember just sort of like combing through everything, just like looking at all the files, like, you know, just like looking at things. And yeah, like didn't get like the internet immediately, and then like, you know, we did, it was 56k, and had that for a good while until like I guess it's like Xbox or something like that, like because like with Xbox Live, I was like, I had to get broadband to do that. So and then yeah, like had a little bit of time on Xbox Live, and just like that sort of headache.
It still is.
Yeah, it's been years since I've played on Xbox Live, so I wonder if it's anything, or if it's the same.
It's a pretty big jump in technology, though, because you first started talking about the Atari, and then you were talking about Xbox Live, so there's a lot that's happened between
those
two. Yeah, a couple things.
That's a pretty big jump, especially, like, the amount of stuff that you could, you know, shoot through the pipeline of the internet, like, you know,
and something voice that you should shoot through the pipeline.
But you know, that's it's a pretty big change.
Pull off my list real quick.
I think the Thunder will like it saved first.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge contribution to the internet and the gaming culture.
Its favorite game is Lightning Returns.
Shut up.
Okay, does anybody want to try to define that, like, or give us their definition for the word geek?
Geek?
I think that means, yeah.
I have unfair advantage.
Geek? Well, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, I have no idea.
Oh, shut your horn.
I don't know. I just know that it's always kind of been used in a, maybe kind of like a pejorative way. So I really don't know what it means. I don't typically use the word often.
Yeah, it's not one I use too much, but like,
only in jest.
Like, I feel like, you know, yeah, like, certainly prior to this decade, like, it's been, yeah, like, used with a negative connotation, but like, it's now, like, people, I guess, sort of like taking ownership of it, and like, you know, it's like, you know, websites like ThinkGeek, you know, like, I've purchased a lot of stuff from there. Like, not, like, you know, too recently, but
neat stuff,
there's
Geek Chic is the one I hear all the time now.
Yeah.
That's the only time I hear it, actually, besides Think Geek, of course.
I hear the term nerd a lot more than I do geek, and because
I think
there's,
that's more of a recent thing, though.
It is more of a recent
yeah.
thing. That's what I mean. That, you know, when you're talking about that, I hear the term, like, nerd culture. There's geek culture. I just don't hear that term. And does, like,
that might have been like the 2000s, and yeah, and, like, it's gone to nerd now.
Well, what is the difference, like?
I would guess, like, geek may carry more of a connotation towards, like, just technology, whereas you can be, like, a nerd about, like, anything. But then there's a, I guess,
I thought,
like,
it was,
know,
like, actually more of the reverse.
Well, anyway, so, you, like,
looked up the definitions for those terms, and a geek is a... originally, geek was a carnival performer who would do outrageous acts such as biting a head off of a chicken or a snake.
Okay, I think that's a pretty apt.
It's all in there.
Nowadays, it's more a person who is often has like an intellectual bent and is disliked. That I guess it was, you know, maybe like in like, you know, the 80s or the 90s, and nowadays it's more an enthusiast or expert, especially in technology or a given activity. So that's yeah, like more.
Yeah, I thought it was more
described.
Like
and pretty much the same goes for nerd, except for it wasn't a like carnival performer. But also a little bit different in that, like, more of a, like, a foolish or contemplative person. So just sort of, like, aloof.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's had a lot of meanings, and it's definitely kind of changed from circus performer.
Yeah, the change makes complete sense, too, because, of course, when the internet and all that was new, people just didn't know how to react to it. But now we're in the information age. And there's a lot more people like that. Thank you. Now I lost my train of thought. But basically, it's very expected to see that technology and people associated with it are a lot more, I guess, respected than they were back then.
Definitely. Now that they're, you know, major focal points for our culture, you know, you have people who've created, like, Facebook and social media networking. And, you know... those that have contributed to, like, the overall social dynamic, like, moot, and, yeah.
So, I, pulled up data from the 2000 census, which, in the year 2000, we got a big packet in the mail saying, census 2000, so this is, like, you know, we're in this. I am, at least, and, you know, I don't know about y'all.
I don't want to get a number.
Anyways, adults and children using the internet for a specific task, August 2000. Let's see. And it's divided into categories of children 3 to 17 and adults 18 and older. 22% of kids were checking email, 32% of adults were. And then information searches, 10% for children, 23.9% for adults. News, weather, sports, 6% of children, 19.6% for adults. School research or courses, 20% for children and 9% for adults. Job-related tasks, 12.5%.
Huh.
That was in the year 2000.
Do we have a recent one to refer to?
Well, when I looked up, like, 2010 census, like, I guess, like, it was, like, broken up, like, over, like, different times, like, they did it, like, different portions throughout the year. So anyways, like, the computer portion wasn't until, like, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the questions it asks are, like, or at least what's the information's been highlighted is totally different. Like, I guess the criteria for, like, you know, that, like, it's sort of, like, nonsensical to ask, like, are you checking email because, like, so, like, the question it asks is, or, like, what I've got pulled up is, computer ownership and high-speed internet use for individuals, state, or by states, or that's 2013. And for Alabama, and actually a good portion of the, like, the South and a portion of, like, the, you know, the middle South, like Texas, Arizona.
Yeah, everything except California and Florida.
Yeah, like, they're purple, which is statistically lower by 5% or more. So less people own computers and have high-speed internet in 2014 as opposed to the year 2000. I have to wonder, like, I guess, like, is computer strictly, like, a desktop?
Yeah.
Like, are they counting, like, phones and other things? And I don't think they are. Like, it's...
Yeah, because I think certainly more here that you'll see people with phones, tablets, all of that doodadding.
Okay, yeah, here we go. Here's another chart. Percentage of households with only handheld devices, 2013. In the 15 to 34 range, it's 9.5. 35 to 44 is 5.8. 45 to 65 is 4 or 3.9. 65 higher at 2.5. This is just like people who only have handheld devices, so like, yeah, like 9%, so nearly 1 in 10 people between the ages of 15 and 34 like don't have a computer, they just have a phone or a tablet that they use.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Unless you're a student, a graphic designer, or a gamer, it's hard to justify buying a computer nowadays. Because now a Chromebook, which is the bare minimum requirements of a computer, is enough to get you through a homework assignment. So, yeah, I can see that.
It does tend to make sense.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's all I really have to say about that. Is it? It makes sense.
Because what's the average price for a tablet? Just, I guess, spitballing. Between like $100 and $400?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Whereas a decent laptop is a basic of $400 to like $2,000 if you're a Mac person. So,
I would say it's actually closer to $500 if you really want something that'll.
Oh, I got mine for like $450, so
okay.
Being generous.
Yeah, given you bought it when like during the sale frame or whatever.
Yeah, there's New Age, which will always be there for people like us.
Yeah, like I've always like built my computers like since like yeah like I've always just like bought the parts and put them together, and
that's an interesting thing is that you built it. You built your computer, and a lot of people do that, but not everybody does that. And do you think I know like back in like. You know, the 90s or 2000s, people would actually build things like this. Like, there was a culture devoted to actually putting things together and tinkering. We're kind of moving away from that now, wouldn't you agree?
Well, I guess, like, it's sort of, like, divergent. Like, there's, like, you know, I guess, like, where the mainstream has infiltrated, it's like, you know, there's ubiquitous access to this technology now where you only ever have to deal with the front end, you know, if you only ever want to deal with the front end. But then there's another group of people who are still devoted to, like, you know, what's going on behind the screen. Like, they want to know, like
yeah,
either, like, software or hardware, because you have, like, stuff like makerspaces and stuff where people are, like, you know, coming together and helping each other realize this.
But at the consumer level, it's all just front-end user experience. That term, user experience, is a new one. And it's
like
a really
planned
interesting
obsolescence,
one.
Like, how, like, everything is, like, you know, just, like, on a tight schedule, like, You know next year the new model's coming out and you've got to get that one.
So is it a problem? I want to say it's a pretty big problem.
Because, well, like, I mean, I guess, like, I have to wonder, like, you know, what all is changing, you know, in each. Like, if everything, I guess, was, like, more, you had to assemble it and put it together so that way, like, you know, you could just, like, change out, like, you know, it's like if it's important for you to, like, you know, have, like, a certain, like, you know, like, you need faster internet connection, then you can buy the faster internet card and continuously upgrade that aspect, you know, so that you have that, but you don't necessarily need, you know, the new screen or, you know, more RAM to you know, run more stuff, like.
So, how often does the average American replace their cell phone?
I would say
once a year. Twice a year.
That's its average. My brother has replaced
people who just
go through them.
Yeah.
My brother has replaced his five times this year already, I think, just because.
And where
it breaks or otherwise?
Yeah. Where does all that end up? Where does the junk end up?
I know they've discussed recycling centers, but most people don't use them. Like, recycle their old cell phones.
Refurbished a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Somehow got back to working order.
Shipped to
Mine's sitting in a drawer.
Yeah, other places. And then people live in it, and they dig through it, and
Well, hopefully this doesn't deviate too far from the point, but lately there was this project I saw on social media and such that was building for modular phones.
Yeah,
it seemed like a really neat initiative to replace key parts of your phone instead of the whole thing at, I guess, less of a price or cost or whatever. I think right now it's in the hands of Motorola. I can't remember who. It started out with an indie developer for technology. And it seems to be, it got in the hands of one of the big cell phone providers. So I want to see that hit the market soon. Because I would like to be a part of, just to see where that goes. Because that would solve a lot of problems, I think, with the recycling and the refurbishing of phones and how often we replace them, maybe. I don't know how big of a problem that is for our market. But I think that would help stimulate something somewhere.
Get to the point where you can just 3D print the circuit board of the phone.
Looking forward to that, too.
Oh, God.
That's, like, something that's, like, a big, like, I have to wonder, like, because I can't see all these, you know, companies that rely on people buying stuff from them just, like, you know, bowing out to this new technology. Like, they're going to try to co-opt it somehow. Like, you know, like, I imagine, like, there's going to be, like, you know, like, everything's going to be, like, licenses. Like, you have, like, you know, you purchase a license that allows you to print 4 copies of this one type of chair so you can have a complete set to go around your table that you only have a license to print one of, or maybe, like, one and then, like, one or two extra legs in case it breaks and, like, you need to replace it.
Yeah, I don't know if that, that kind of thing might actually work when we start printing actual things.
Level.
Yeah, from like using 3D printers to print functional objects such as that, because you could license the actual file for creative into the Creative Commons and prevent that from happening.
Again, I imagine there'll be like divergent, or there'll be a group of people who, yeah, just like, they would just assume, like, either design their own table or just use, like, basic table 001, and it's just, like, as polygonal as can be, and,
But then people will start, you can torrent the
oh, yeah, if cool you've seen, well, Pirate Bay lately, you'll notice there is already a section on the front page for Fizzables, which I'm assuming if they're ever, like, blueprints for 3D printing, that's exactly where it's going to go.
Cool. But, like, once companies like, I guess, like, IKEA or, like, other, like, big designers, like, start, like, experiencing piracy in that way, like, I'd imagine, like, unless the law's already shifted and, like, culture's already so behind it that, like, they, like, you know, they missed their shot, like, 5 years ago to get in front of this, then,
Yeah. 3D printing is a real gray zone right now, because no one knows how to proceed, I guess, or how to predict what can go wrong. I imagine there is probably a lot that can. The topic of piracy in regards to it is really an unknown. Like, I try and imagine a way in which it can be safely distributed to just companies and providers and such like that, but I can't picture it. Like, as soon as it's in the hands of the consumer, it's probably just on the net the next day. So I don't know. I don't know what 3D printing uses as a resource either. Like, is it some kind of mold, plastic?
Yeah, it's a certain type of plastic. I'm not.
How hard is it to get that right now? As far
Well, and then, well, I think there's also like there's you know common like commercially available printers. Like take like a certain kind of plastic, but they can essentially be anything that you can like liquefy or like you know shoot out of a jet, and like because it's just like you know just a jet and moving on like you know these coordinates building up an object, and there's like a new form of like 3D printing technology there. It's like it looks like alien, because it's just like there's like a little pool that's like you know half an inch deep of just like this molten plastic stuff, and then like an arm comes down and it just like pulls the object up out of it, and
Wow.
Yeah, like
that's
it.
So theoretically, can I use mercury as a base?
Well, I mean, it's liquid, so it would just like roll, beat up, and roll away.
I guess so.
But I mean, like other, like I mean, I'm sure like there's probably like a solder base, like 3D printer that like yeah can just like, you know, I've heard like you know people talk about like 3D printing buildings in the future.
We're getting pretty deep into sci-fi here.
Yeah.
Ghost in the Shell territory, maybe?
Not that far. Not that scary.
But I guess like two recent things I've read about with 3D printing would be, like I forget which museum, but like they're going and scanning their collection and putting it online in the commons, so like anybody who wants to can like print out like, you know, like ships, like and other like things.
Is that the Internet Archive that's doing that?
And, you know, very well could. I don't honestly know. But and then another thing I heard on the radio recently was ISIS or whatever has been like going and like destroying these like really like old like artifacts and monuments. There's an artist that's using 3D printing, like recreating them, and then inside of it there's a memory card that like you can go up and read with your phone or whatever, and like it tells you like historically like all the information about that, and like shows you like pictures of what was there before they replaced it and all that sort
of
stuff.
That's really cool. They're using their phone. Is it like a QR type code?
I'm not
thing,
exactly
or?
Sure. Like it could like broadcast like a Wi-Fi signal or something. Like it's some way of like, you know, like it just like like anybody who's nearby has access to that.
That's neat. And I heard, I actually saw the video of ISIS destroying those artifacts that are just timeless. It's really sad that that's happening. But there was actually a video of like an art historian like watching that video of ISIS like destroying, and he was just like completely heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And that,
how would you record that?
They're just trying to spread.
It's like, you know, their own propaganda video.
They think they're doing good.
It just seems very dark to me to watch someone become very depressed and sad.
Yeah. Oh, I guess.
No, I already know it's a tragedy just watching someone's reaction to it.
Well, if it's happening in the world,
I get the purpose of it.
Needs to be exposed to it, but
where do we delineate from?
We got on ISIS.
Just sitting quietly, like listening to you guys far off.
We were looking at the census, and then I just got off track on terms of cell phone and camera
phones. Well, I mean that's fine. Like, I mean we've gone out on a tangent and we've like you know gone into some interesting stuff. So that's cool. That's what the point of this is about.
I kind of wanted to go back to talking about smartphones.
Sure.
I had a question that I want to bring up, and we could talk about it. So I want to say, is a population armed with smartphones a good thing for a democratic society?
Well,
I know there are pros and cons, but
we've seen. Kylie and I have watched something in a similar vein. What was it? Was it Black Mirror? The episode of Black Mirror where literally it was this woman being punished by spoilers. this woman being punished by society, and what they did to her was they alienated her off in this compound where she redid the scenario of the crime every time, and people followed her around with smartphones watching her every move or every suffering moment and recorded it, and it was part of her punishment by that society.
And like, people bought tickets to go in and film her.
I've not seen that episode.
And then at the end, like, her memory's wiped and she does it again.
Oh, you've watched it too, haven't you?
I haven't seen all of
it. You haven't seen
that?
Okay, well, spoilers.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
That is
technically non-violent.
Yes. It was very intense because if you think about it, really from your own scenario too, like, you being pursued by people, your every moment, just like there are people who live like this already, who are just hounded this way. So think about it in your own perspective, just like living your every day where people followed you around and documented your every moment with a smartphone and uploaded it to the internet where other people could access
it. Is it a privacy issue?
Is
it an access, or is it just kind of like this, I guess that would definitely be an issue with privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't live your day-to-day life as you would normally
or perhaps you try to, and it's just a harassment upon that.
And how does that, how would you say that threatens living life in a democratic society, or a society that's supposed to be founded off of democratic principles?
Because what's stopping a majority from electing themselves able to do that? So,
yeah.
And you not having yourself in that majority able to defend your right to remain private.
Did you want to say something?
Yeah.
But that's my question.
Well, I was gonna try to, like, I guess, tie into what you were currently saying. I can see, like, you know, if things go a certain direction, like, what if there's, like, a day comes where, like, rather than, like, a right to privacy, there's, like, a right to information, where, like, nobody's able to, like, because, like, if, like, you know, technology gets to the point where we're no longer able to encrypt and, like, keep things from one another, and so, like, somebody's always able going to, or somebody's always going to be able to, like, steal stuff from somebody else, like, if you just, like, remove all barriers and make everything available to everybody, then, you know, total transparency, like, what, then nobody has anything to benefit or to gain, to leverage
off another. It's like that game Watch Dogs, if you guys know of it.
I'm not aware.
Well, the key concept is the main character has this super phone where he can hack anything in a city.
Mm.
Like, because the entire city is, like, I guess, hardwired to a server or something, and he has complete access to everybody and everything. And it's just fun to play like that. But, sorry, I thought it was relevant.
Oh, it is.
What you were talking about, like, living in that type of world where all information is made public, I don't think will ever work, because there's always something that we're wanting to hide. Such as, we don't want our credit card information to be out there. We don't want our passwords to be out there. We don't want, I mean, think of a lot of things that we need to hide and we need to encrypt from people. There's a lot of it when you think about it. I think that encryption is only going to get better and stronger. Are you, like, familiar with the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation? I think they had, like, a pretty landmark case where they, like, a few years ago or whatever, where they said that the right to encrypt your software is protected under the First Amendment, essentially, because it counts as free speech. And before encryption, like, software encryption was considered a, like, a national secret, or it was regarded as something protected by the military. So there's that. I just think that there needs to be efforts pushed forward to keep our information.
Well, I mean, I'm not advocating
right.
this, I'm just putting it out there as, like, what if, like...
What if that?
You know, if you know, things develop, like, with just, like, legislation and technology, and, like, if that, like, yeah, a trend developed towards that. Because, I mean, like, us today can't perceive of, like, you know, wanting something like that, but, like, what if, you know, a couple of generations from now, for them, it's just like, well, yeah, like... But then also, like, I guess, like, it would be interesting in, like, you know... If information couldn't be marketed, then it wouldn't be profitable for Google or other search, you know, like, you know, data trending and analysis, like, places, like, it wouldn't be profitable for them to collect the data anymore if everybody could have access to what they're collecting. So then, like, it would, like, you know...
Then everything would be in shambles, wouldn't it? Every bank account emptied... Etc. Etc.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of for, like, encryption. You know, pushing forward to cryptographic protocols on the internet that are publicly available, to where you have a right to just encrypt your information so that it's safe and nobody can essentially turn it into a means to market ads.
No, I'm all for that too. I think that might fall under net neutrality eventually. I know right now it's kind of barring corporations from playing with the basic notion of the internet, but eventually they're going to keep fighting and get it to where they can do something again. So encryption, I think, will be necessary to protect us from that.
Yes. Yay for encryption.
Yeah.
Have we not been recording?
No, it is. I'm just trying to save the time.
Well, I guess we should get back. I'm good. No longer relevant.
Well, I mean, I felt like it's kind of spun out, so if you wanted to...
I didn't really get to answer the question, I guess, come to think of it, on whether or not it's good to have everybody with a smartphone. I would say, yeah, it's good to have a device where we can gather information and communication all the time. It can save lives constantly, and having information readily available is good, assuming it's used the right way. Though one of my greatest fears, as we were talking about earlier, is if I went viral, or something I did went viral in a very negative way.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was hounded constantly everywhere I went online.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, we've seen that there's really nothing stopping them from accessing you online.
No, somebody will find a way to hack your Twitter or your
Somebody leaks
Instagram.
A phone number and
gets in
an address.
In my, like, cloud, steals all my nude photos. I have plenty, trust me.
Oh, I know.
No.
They're all over 4chan.
This is a very recent fear that seems very real, depending on how much attention the wrong people give you.
Internet communities and sort of like, you know, like what roles they play, because, you know, you mentioned like 4chan, and then you've got like sort of like the semi-associated like branches of like, you know, like LulzSec and other like, and then, oh yeah, go, like, so like, you know, like what's a hacker, you know, anybody want to define that?
Anybody who accesses some kind of personal data without permission, I would say.
That's a pretty general definition. Like, you know, like, I guess going back to, you know, like, the history of the term, like, it was, like, you know, originally, like, people who were, like, you know, like, back when everything was, like, command prompt and you didn't have, like, the front-end interface, like, people had to know how to get around a system, and then, like, you know, once things became more commercially available, like, you know, these people knew, like, back doors and ways to, like, navigate and get around, and, like, you know, people had intimate knowledge of how these machines operated, and nowadays it's more, like, a term that's used is called, like, script kiddies. It's, like, somebody who just, like, they download a raw file that has all the executables they need to, like, DDoS, you know, somebody, like, you know, so they can take down a server, or, like, you know, like, brute force, you know, password crackers and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, like, they don't really know how it is and how it works, but, yeah, like, they have access to it and they use it.
That'd be really frightening if a script kiddie got a hold of some code that was really, really powerful, like Stuxnet or something, and just decided to just have some fun. It'd be really, really scary. But as far as like a definition for a hacker, I would say it's people who first they're interested in learning how things work, and they take those things and they use them for other things not originally intended. So they're going to find ways to work with the tools that they're given and create something completely new. It's just, I guess, a culture built around breaking and fixing things.
There's a short story by Philip K. Dick called The Variable Man, where it's like a guy from, like, I think, like, mid-20th century, whatever, like, gets teleported to the future. And, like, somehow, like, since he's, like, just, like, used to working with his hands, even though, like, there's all this, like, you know, technology that's far more advanced than from what he was used to, like, you know, working with, like, since he knows how to, like, you know, use his hands and, like, you know, trace wires and that kind of stuff, like, he's able to, like, crack open stuff and, like, fix things that other people were just, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's broken, we throw it away and we, you know, print a new one or whatever. And like, so... like, and there's, like, this war going on, and, so, like, they need, you know, he ends up being integral in that, but, yeah, it's still just, like, I guess, you know, relating it to, like, that idea of, like, I guess people used to be a lot more, you know, thrifty, and, like, would, you know, would save everything and make use of everything, and, yeah, like, we've certainly gotten away from that, and now everything's, like, plastic and, like, recyclable / disposable. It's like, you know, here we don't enforce recycling, it's voluntary, but then, like, up in Portland where Nick and Alex are, it's mandatory. You have to recycle. You can't have food in your trash. You have to compost it. You get fined if they find that kind of stuff in your trash.
I think that's good. I think that's, yes, especially where the planet is kind of going now. We're faced with the problem of our own waste. We produce so much waste, we don't really know what to do with it. It's causing a lot of problems for the way the planet works. So any legislation like that, I think, is a good thing.
I mean, let's just be honest. They're going to go for the Futurama option where they just shoot it into space.
That's space.
We probably would.
Oh, yeah.
If we could, we'd probably... That's how we execute people, is just send them into space.
On giant trash boats.
Yeah, just throw them away or whatever. Put Congress on them and just send them to the sun.
Problem solved.
We'll figure out how to just make things work with them.
I'll jump aboard.
Well, yeah, like, and then, like, going back to the whole, like, are cell phones good or bad, like, I mean, like, it seems like the way that, you know, we're voting is very outdated. Like, if, you know, it seems like there could be a social program that ensures everybody has a cell phone and service, and then, like, and it comes time to vote, like, everybody just pulls out their phone, and everybody at the same time votes.
There's an issue with that, though, because where's that information going? I actually read I don't necessarily totally agree, but it did make me think. I read an article saying that why paper voting might be the best option is because it's easier to do a recount than it is to have digital information. So where is that information kind of going? If it's just getting, is it getting consolidated somewhere on some server somewhere? Like,
it's also more open to tampering, I would think.
Yeah.
Like, one very ambitious hacker could pick president.
Well, I mean, like, if it's that, like,
moot.
if it's that vulnerable or like, you know, people are worried about it, then, like, why not, like, vote, you know, several times? Like, I mean, like, you know, like, not like, you know, like on American Idol, you just call in as many times as you can. Like, it's like, you know, it's like they do several different, like, you know, we're going to have, like, the 12 o'clock voting and the 2 o'clock voting and the 4 o'clock voting. And then, like, they see, like, you know, like...
But 4chan's already... The only reason I say this is because I don't know if anybody remembers the Launchpad fiasco.
Yeah, there have been a lot more since then.
Yeah, there have been a lot more since then. But those were daily voting racks. Like, there was a new vote every day,
that,
and they just bombarded it every day.
That's utilizing, like proxies to generate new IPs to be able to register as, like, different... And, like, there's, like, a, you know, limitless IPs that, like, you know, aren't associated to any given individual with a social security number. Like, if you had, like, you know, if everybody had a cell phone and, like, it was registered to them and you had, like, your SIM card that you transferred from, like, you know, conspiracy theorists would say, like, oh, well, then that's, like, you know, like, the barcode on the, like, you know, it's like that's how they keep track of everybody and... blah, 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 like, that of itself would be an invasion of privacy, but, yeah, like, then, like, that, I think that would eliminate your, like, you know, voter
fraud. Yeah, just the system would have to be absolutely perfect.
Oh, yeah.
But
and nobody
right now it's not perfect. Right
no,
now there's
no.
Voter fraud. I mean, not like, you know, a ton, but, like, it's enough to change things.
Yeah, we're still working on that one. If we do this without being prepared, it could be a lot worse.
Look before you leap.
I'm sure there's some kind of plan out there. There's always a plan.
Yeah.
But, okay, so this is something I thought about earlier, I've thought about in the past, and that's, like, you know, the idea of, like, and then sort of goes back to what you're saying, but, like, you know, like, people just, like, you know, following you around with a cell phone and documenting all that, like, because that sort of goes to, like, you know, why would somebody do that? Well, like, that person would probably be a celebrity. Or, like, you know, if you go viral, then, you know, it's like, you know, you've got celebrity. And used to, like, you know, you did that, you gained celebrity by being a very well-known writer or being in movies, on the radio or in TV, like, but now, like, with the internet, like, you've got, like, a lot more outlets to market yourself or what you're doing, and so, like, you have different, like, I guess, like, forms of celebrity where it's, like, you're well-known within your audience, but then you step outside of your audience. You step outside of your audience, and you're anonymous again. So, like, I wonder if there's, like, some sort of, like, maybe, like, an inverse trend of, like, as technology becomes widely distributed, like, maybe, like, celebrity will be, like, spread out amongst more and more to where it's, like, maybe we'll reach a day in, like, you know, generations from now, like, once there's been, like, a shift in, like, you know, like, the, you know, like, cable providers no longer exist and, like, you know, things become much more, I guess, like, you know, independently funded. Like, you just simply purchase packages or whatever, like, you know, for programs that you want rather than buying all these channels. Or, like, you know, things change. And so then, like, you've got much more, like, specific, you know, audiences. Like, I don't know, that's an idea.
So it's becoming more and more fragmented.
Or that's what I, like, I guess, I don't have an answer. I'm not saying it is that way. I'm just, like, you know, wondering if that is happening, and if in the future, like, you know, like, what a future would look like without, I guess, like, you know, like, the movie stars of, or, like, are we ever going to get away from that? Like, is there always going to be, like, you know, people whose lives we always want to know what's going on with, regardless of you know, where we get to.
As long as David Bowie exists.
I think that the frontier of, like, celebrity and the common person is becoming, like, blurred in a way because of that fragmented world that we're living in. I think we're living in it now because there's so many ways, there's so many different genres, and there's so many different outlets for people to kind of tune into. That there is really no, like, I mean, the older generation had, like, you know, just turn on the TV and just watch whatever a corporation wanted to just kind of throw at them. Mm-hmm. It was that one source where everybody would just kind of gather around and just get information from. Now there are just so many different outlets because of the internet. And yeah, we are living in kind of like a fragmented world, I think. So that time is now. And yeah, when it comes to, like, celebrity, the whole thing, notion of being a celebrity is just kind of this... The whole notion of it is really kind of fucked in a way. I mean, it is. Like, you know, there are still celebrities and there are still people that go crazy over them, but I think that that's becoming smaller. More, it's just kind of becoming like a... the line between, I guess, celebrity and common folk is becoming blurred.
I think we can attribute part of that to YouTube, which goes back to that question of viral and how quickly things can just spread out to the masses. Because you got people like PewDiePie. Almost every parent of a teenage boy has probably heard that name by now, assuming they play Minecraft or some crap. And most kids, according to statistics, do. So that's, I guess, a new kind of celebrity. It may not replace or be an equivalent of our old ones, but it's definitely there. That's just the best example I can think of right now.
Well, I think you got a good example. And yeah, I would say certainly YouTube does attribute to a lot of the blur... or, I guess, obfuscating of the line. And, I mean, as it progresses and as people, more people respond to that, and of course YouTube growing with that, with all the traffic, like, it's only going to get to a point where, yeah, the everyday person is a celebrity on the internet. You know, they live under this anonymity, and they exist there, but people know them differently. Like, they're not the person you would interact with on the street.
And, like, I guess, like, another notion is, like, because, yeah, like, I guess, like, you know, with things going viral, that's, like, you know, like, for the most part, an organic process. Like, you know, something just, like, gets picked up and it spreads because, like, you know, for whatever reason. And, like, you know, I guess a lot of businesses are trying to, like, you know, look at, like, analytics and trending and looking, like, trying to figure out what is going to go viral before it goes viral so that they can get their money into it and, you know, bigger bang for the buck. But, yeah, like, can you really predict, like, what people, can they produce a formula that is that accurate at finding out what we want or what we're going to like before we like it? Like, I mean, we've only tried, like, the, like, Ask Max on Netflix, like, once, and I was like, no.
Well, with, I'm sorry to be, I was going to say cookies, because that, all right, so when you visit websites on the internet, you leave a track, like, you leave a track of what sites you're hitting, what sort of information you're seeking out, and then they base advertisements around that to reach out to you because they know, oh, okay, well, you hit these sites every day at these times, so around these times, we're going to advertise to you these things. I mean, you're leaving that footprint that they can easily trace back and
but that's only, you. Like, oh, go ahead and be used. You were going to say something.
I just wanted to say that I think that if we were to develop some sort of algorithm that would track that, the whole nature of the meme would just completely lose its very definition. Because it has to come from some sort of chaotic source, and it also depends on the structure of the network, too. Like, if it's coming from... If a meme just, like, originates on, like, 4chan or whatever, 4chan doesn't have as much structure as, like, Facebook does or something. Not saying that a meme can't originate from Facebook, but more likely than not, when you think of all the internet memes, it comes from, you know, boards like 4chan and various other, like, times where the internet was was more anarchic, more kind of chaotic. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, people, there's no repercussions for what's being said or done, so... You know, people throw stuff out there, and then if other people like it, they just spout it back out.
Yeah, and now kind of like media companies are trying to—they're seeing that, and they're trying to replicate it. Like, they're getting around and saying, "What can we do to just make things go viral? How can we tweak it a little bit so that
they try so
yeah,
hard?
Yeah, they try, but real stuff like that will come from just the chaotic, dark depths of.
Yeah, it's very obvious to tell when they're trying to push something in that direction. Mm-hmm. It's usually very sad. Whereas, like, the first memes I can think of was, like, Numa Numa. That kid became a celebrity overnight.
Oh, yeah.
He got millions of views. Anyone from that decade probably knows it.
And also, apparently, like, I remember, like, might have been, like, on, like, Martin Sargent's, like, podcast, video cast thing, but, like, it was, like, talking about, like, anyway, like, he, like, if you want him to appear on anything or partake in it, like, he has, like, a lawyer that you have to go through. And, like, he, like, you know, has, like, you know, a fee that he, like, doesn't negotiate on. It was very, like, I guess, like, serious about it. Whereas, like, Tron guy was, like, very, like, he would go to conventions in his Tron guy outfit and you know, be Tron guy. And then that's I guess like you know the whole like I did like you know 15 minutes of fame like you know how do you reproduce that viral effect like again and again like you have to like I guess consistently produce something on par with what you did the first time and then like. You know, and but then, like, you know, if you're just, like, working within YouTube, that's, like, you know, a lot of people make, you know, a living off of doing that, but, like, that's, you know, they're essentially working with YouTube, or, you know, like, YouTube can change user agreements at any time, and they can alienate their user base, and, but YouTube can probably take a bigger hit than some of the people that are working and putting their stuff on there. And so I guess eventually the idea would be like, you know, developing and getting out of YouTube and being big enough to like exist on your own. And so, and like you posted something, maybe about like, he's like a some sort of like Kickstarter project for like having like website, like, you know, like free websites, like, and content, that sort of stuff. Like, I guess the idea would just be getting, like, you know, getting back to, like, everybody having their own website, like, and hosted, you know, by themselves or, you know, like, collectively somewhere, but...
Rather than having it on, like, a service or something.
Yeah, like, having, you know, corporate management,
your own
dictating.
Instead of a GoDaddy or something.
Yeah.
It's called NeoCities, kind of a play on the old GeoCities. But what it does is you sign up and you basically just get a blank HTML page, which you're just able to, you can code whatever you want into it. And the way that differs from a lot of other sites, you can go to Tumblr and stuff and do it, but with this site, you're not necessarily getting a predefined template. A template can help you, but it can also hinder you. You know, back in the early days of the internet, there were no real templates. You would just kind of like start with the blank page and just work from there. And what I like about that is that you're worrying more about getting information across and the structure rather than trying to create some sort of user experience or whatever, or some predefined path that a user, when they get onto the website, is supposed to follow. It's a lot more chaotic, and I think that could generate a lot more interesting art. There's a lot of really cool websites on that page. There's a lot of weird stuff, too. So, in a good way.
Yeah, it sounds like a web designer's wet dream. Sounds great.
What about how news gets disseminated in the internet? And how, you know, when a lot of, like, chaotic events happen in our history, such as with the issue with the riots in Ferguson and how people just took to the streets with their cell phones and started streaming a live feed of that. And people were just tuning in like that. I watched just some guy just stream the whole thing. I didn't tune into the news. I was just watching a live stream. So I think that that's how news is going to change too, is people aren't going to, they don't want to buy the dramatization. If you turn on the television and watch like Fox News, it's just like graphics everywhere. Like, it's so bad.
So I guess I'm gonna tie this into what you were saying, one of our friends recently posted something about, like, you know, it seems like Facebook has been like sort of like crazy recently. Like, everybody's just been like at everybody, like, because I've had comments directed at me that was just like, well, I wasn't expecting you to have that reaction to that, like, you know, just like that sort of stuff. But
yeah, see, about that is, like, I've taken a little bit of time on Facebook just to kind of cull through my feed and just kind of like have it only display like relevant information to me, so I just don't have to kind of like, I hate engaging in arguments on the internet because it's just everybody kind of tries to pretend like they're speaking from some sort of a point of authority, and it just gets really, really annoying. But hey, go ahead with what you're saying though.
I've been seeing, like, I've recently had to start doing that as well. Adjusting what I'm seeing in my feed. I've just been seeing, like, a lot of, like, I'm ashamed to call them conspiracy stories or theories, like, because it's, like, it's so poorly conceived, like, it doesn't deserve the title of a conspiracy. It's just, like, it's, like, oh, like, you misread something, or, like, oh, like, it was a typo and you're freaking out over it, like, that sort of, like, that's not a conspiracy, but yeah, like, I've been seeing some stuff like that, and that sort of stuff is like, you know, purported as news, and with this shooting that happened in Tennessee yesterday, or was it the day before now?
I think it was the day before.
Okay. Apparently there's like some right-wing conservative Christian blog person found like a tweet of like an ISIS account like claiming responsibility for the attack, and then they changed the date. Like, it took place like, I think, like a couple hours after the event. They changed the timestamp on it to read 2 hours before. And then reposted it on their blog saying, like, look like this is the connection, like this person is associated with these people, and Fox News picked it up, and they ran the story for a couple hours before, I guess, it got retracted, and, yeah, like...
Why does that happen? Like, what if... You think Fox News is just so desperate for information that they're just not willing to fact check?
I wouldn't say information as much as attention.
And, yeah, like, I think, like, their model is based off of, like, you know, say what we want because people are going to watch it, and then when we make our corrections, like, nobody's going to remember what we're talking about. And so, like the whole idea of accountability, like, isn't even brought up.
Yeah, it's all about views.
It's pretty bad. I mean, I don't know. It is really bad.
But, yeah, I guess, like, you know, if, you know, the networks fall apart and don't exist in 20 years, then, you know, like, some like, you know, nut job blogger can say whatever they want, and then there's not going to be a news outlet that, you know, broadcasts across the nation to pick up the story to give to everybody. Like, you know, the few people that go to the website on the regular will watch it, and then, like, nobody else will care or pay attention to them.
I think I remember reading somewhere that Facebook was working on an algorithm to kind of correct the bullshit disinformation that people spread, and so it's working on a way, like, if it picks up an article that is possibly, like, misinformation, bullshit, conspiracy theory, it'll automatically call it out. And whether that's a form of, you can argue that that is in itself a form of kind of control. It is very much a form of control in how you're seeing your information being displayed. So I just wanted to bring that up. I don't have an opinion about it, but that's something I think they're working on.
Mm.
But on that social network, all you really are is just a piece of data that they can in turn take and understand exactly how you think, so they could market stuff to you. That whole when everybody on Facebook was changing their profiles to, like, rainbows or whatever, or their like
rainbow filtering.
Yeah, rainbow filtering or whatever. Their people, like, came. I don't know if it was like an actual thing or if it was just a conspiracy theory, but people were saying that Facebook was using the data generated from that to see how fast, like, if one person were to change it, how fast other people would. And I thought, like, whoa, that's a really, really good way of figuring out how to get that information. Because, like, yeah, they would easily be able to understand, okay, if this person did it first, how many, like, does it grow exponentially, or, like, how fast can that spread?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Have you heard about that? Did you hear about that?
No, but I mean, that makes sense. Like, you know, they're just, like, you know, tracing, and, you know, like, a wildfire. Like,
yeah.
Just back to
how fast,
like,
it could.
The match that started it.
I don't know. I thought it was, I always think a lot of stuff that company does is really interesting. How, you know, depending on whether it's ethical or not. They do a lot of unethical things, but it's always interesting.
Just Facebook in general?
Yeah, just
they're
Facebook.
Definitely innovative. I'm not sure they always have their attention in the right place.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of impressive stuff to where they're not that far behind, like Google, which of course is just leagues ahead of everybody else right now. But some of the things they can do, I look forward to. Right now they own the Oculus Rift, of course.
Yeah.
But we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see.
Down.
I mean, I'm pretty distrustful of all major networks, but they're, you know, those two, Google and Facebook, are doing things that other companies aren't doing. And it's really interesting to see how that's taking society and whether that can be, I guess, cohabitable with a democratic society or institution. So.
And like, it's interesting, and, you know, for, like, our demographic, I think, you know, Facebook is still, like, the major media, but when, like, a younger demographic, I guess, like, teens up to 18, it's not, is it Snapchat or Imgur? Not Imgur, that's what you do.
Wait.
I don't do Imgur.
Admit it.
I get on it.
What is it? Instagram.
Oh, Instagram.
Are
yeah.
You sure? Well, there was also, what is it? Is it Flickr, the one that's the dating app?
I think so.
Tinder.
Yes, Tinder.
Tinder is a photo hosting service.
Okay, so for the 18 to 24 demographic,
just
knew how to R. Missing that one. It's Snapchat, 45%.
All
and then
Vine.
Yeah, Vines.
Twitter.
And Tumblr. Instagram is at 23. So yeah, Snapchat is. And then Facebook is down at the bottom with 16. Oh, LinkedIn is at the very bottom with 14.
Right.
Of course.
We don't care about jobs.
Yeah, LinkedIn's bigger with 25 to 44. Those two, or that's two different groups. But.
So is Twitter not on there?
Yeah, Twitter is.
Is Reddit on there? 17%.
Reddit's not. It's Snapchat, Vine, Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+.
It doesn't even have Imgur.
No, what was this time frame for?
This is December 2014.
Not too long ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, Imgur isn't very, I guess, commonplace yet.
Yeah.
Reddit is up there. Imgur will probably follow.
Well, I think Reddit took a hit.
Imgur has a
yeah.
Monthly unique global hits of 68.8 million. So over a month, 68.8 unique users, or million users.
Yeah.
It's
growing, I know that much.
81% male, 19% female.
Not given the images.
Uh, 18 to 24 and 25 to 34.
Oh, cool. So I can just sit here on Imgur for like 9 years of my life. Still following them.
Majority have no kids by a large margin.
Some stereotypes are true.
Well, when you're on Imgur all day, you really don't have time for that kind of nonsense.
I guess. And the lower side of the income bracket.
I can see it.
College education or some college.
Does it say fine arts majors?
No, it doesn't say anything about majors.
Why, are you trying to figure yourself out there?
No, I already know.
Yeah, you were on it, what, earlier?
I think you just said this, right? It took a hit recently, didn't they?
Yeah.
There was some controversy in the past
with
couple
the,
weeks.
What was it, the CEO, or was she only...
CEO was part of it. It started with them removing offensive... Reddit pages or communities
which
they thought were toxic and, of course, didn't belong. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, went against their whole "we are a bastion of free speech" motto.
Sorry to interrupt. It's kind of funny because Imgur went the same thing about censorship when they were introducing censorship to the boards for advertising or whatever. Like, almost 2 weeks prior to the Reddit incident, that was still on fire on the Imgur boards. And then, Reddit goes through the same boat.
Yeah, they're sister sites, so it's not surprising. But yeah, it's the controversy that started, and then people started flocking away from it.
Yeah.
At least the ones that felt, I guess, they'd been slighted in some manner. I don't know, it's a can of worms. I wouldn't know where to go without knowing a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
But that's just the basics of what I know about the situation.
That is true.
Yeah, so I can see why Reddit might not be quite up there with the big boys yet in terms of Instagram and whatnot, because it's... I don't know if I'd really call it social media. I just call it...
it's a little bit dead for me.
It is. You're not necessarily obligated to, like, really create a profile or even...
Right.
It's more of like it's a news aggregate. Is people just share stuff and it's voted up or down. Like, I mean, back in high school, was a spent a lot of time on Dig. and would watch like the Dig podcast, where you know they would like do like you know take like the top 10 stories and like you know talk about them or something like that, and
Oh, and the code for Reddit is open source, I believe, which means you can implement it on your own thing, your own server.
I know. I'm pretty sure 4chan is open. There's a whole bunch of
third-party
sites.
Yeah, like
the Chan boards.
I forget the name
7chan
for that.
7chan, 420chan.
Or not the specific, but like that that format. Like there's a name.
Image board.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, they're image boards, but like that specific, like the color scheme and the font, like everything, like that's a theme. There's like a couple different, like I guess you know, Chan themes that you can that are you know widely used.
That's cool.
Doesn't surprise me.
But yeah, so and it's interesting. Yeah, so like I mean, there's you know these different websites that have like similar functionality, and yeah, like some are like. Yeah, like you said, like sister sites, like they have an overlap in their user base. But yeah, like you know, like with you know, some, like an image board, you can have like complete anonymity.
Anonymity.
Never seen that. And then like on like a news aggregate, like you have a profile. It doesn't really matter so much who you are. Like you can just sort of like have like a persona there, but like. And people just sort of pay attention to, like, your track record of, like, what is the content that you post and is it regularly good or not. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you have, like, social media where it's entirely based off of who you know. I got a question to ask to kind of wrap this up would be, like, how have you felt like all these things have shaped, like, how you, like, I guess, identify and, like, come to, like, know yourself and, like, because I feel like our generation, you know, it maybe it started, like, a generation or two before us, but certainly more so in the generations coming after us, like, we're not, like, geographically isolated anymore to, like, you know, with the whole, like, you know, stuff that's been going on, like, with, like, the, you know, the Confederate flag, like, that's something I never identified with, something I never associated with part of my heritage or identity or whatsoever, so it makes no difference to me, like, you know, whether it's there or not, like, I, you know, honestly, I prefer it not be there, because I think it's, you know, part of the past, and it, that's where it belongs, is in the past, but, so yeah, like, but my identity, I feel like, has been shaped a great deal because of having access to technology and being able to, like, identify myself not so much in terms of where I grew up, but, like, who I associated with and what I, like, you know, content that I took in and, you know, chose to make a part of my identity.
The point about the Confederate flag not mattering, I think, is something that's relevant because I guess if I want to think about what I associate myself with and what I identify with, I was much more threatened about the whole net neutrality fiasco because I identify, of course, with, I guess, online communities in general. That's where I go for everything. And the internet itself is just sort of something that is special to me. So the thought of it being restricted or being taken away from me in any way made me, uncomfortable.
I can,
so that makes more sense to me, and I can identify with it, I guess, in a similar way to the people that are losing the Confederate flag heritage.
I definitely, like, understand about the whole net neutrality thing, and certainly being more affected by it, because I myself being a person who has spent majority of my life on the internet, and by I mean majority meaning I like completely kept myself socially drawn to people on the internet, like the threat of things affecting that society, that growth as I've known it, kind of that did put more restraint on me, but as far as the Confederate flag goes, and I guess, you know, when you really think about it, you know, some facets of the internet as being a society of hate, like, if they do that, you know, it's not uncommon. Like, you can certainly draw parallels between both of those scenarios and see where they coincide, and yeah, I guess I can definitely observe the similarities.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you can actually say that technology can shape your identity.
Oh,
it has the power to shape, and you can actually construct an identity online that's completely different from any other types of identity. We're able to have, like, multiple identities and exist in that world. You know, whether any one of them can be, like, your true identity, I don't know. That's a different question. But
a little too deep right now.
You're able to, like, you're able to go in and you can take various elements like video, audio, and stuff and put it online and construct it into discrete elements in time and connect it to describe your identity. It could be like your portfolio or whatever, or just your timeline or whatever on social network. But you're able to actually cull through. And if you see something that you don't like, you can get rid of it. You don't really have that in, you know, in your meat existence. You know, if something happens, you can't really cull through and delete it. So that's a way of constructing an identity. And also that goes into just, you know, data being, you know, when you put it on the internet, that in turn is marketed toward you. Yeah, I don't know, but that, the whole idea of that is interesting to me, how you can actually just construct whatever identity that you want, and if you want to, you can change it overnight.
Yeah, like, that's a topic I sort of touched on with Jackie back when I was on Montevallo Music, or Earth Hotel now. But anyways, yeah, like, and what I was saying there was sort of like, I think, you know, the internet is, you know, this big, just like space that allows us to go in and explore, you know, different aspects of identity, and, like, you know, like, we're able to, just like do things without repercussion or with less likelihood of repercussion because, yeah, like, some people, like, you know, if you slip up and make a mistake, like, somebody can, like, find you somehow or something if you piss off the wrong people, but you know, the vast majority of people, that doesn't happen. And, like, anyways, yeah, like, and we, you do have a lot of or a portion or a population of users that utilize the technology to wreak havoc on other people's lives or do things like and I think that's just, like, you know, I guess see that, you know, and, like, humanity collectively dealing with its baggage, like, this sort of stuff exists within us, and so it's happening, and at least now we know about it, we can identify it, and, you know, utilizing technology, we can trace it back and figure out where it's coming from and try to, you know, fix it somehow, you know, have conversations and figure out why people feel this, you know, way about, like, certain things, and yeah, like, I feel like, the, you know, ultimately the internet promotes
whatever it wants.
Or no, I think it promotes something, like, because it's an expression of ourselves. It's a feedback loop of humanity.
Yeah.
And it only spits out what we put into it. And so we're getting our own medicine through it, and eventually, it's got to do something.
Yeah, well said. It's basically just seeing yourself, and given the option to do a lot of things with that information. You know, can construct it in a lot of different ways. But yeah,
It's pretty interesting.
It's a really interesting time to be alive. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of interesting things happening.
I look forward to the rest of my life with it.
All right. Well, I think we're good. Does anybody want any more closing remarks?
I can have something just to quickly add. There's sure. A interview with David Bowie that you could probably maybe add to the beginning or end of it, but it's him talking about the internet back then, like what he thinks the internet is going to be like, and he gets scary accurate. It's a really good interview.
Is it like a recently released or is it like something?
I found it on Reddit.
Okay.
But I could send you the link.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he's from outer space. So we have to agree on that.
He got to do a lot of things right.
I mean, look at him. He's lived this long and been that successful and he's married to Iman.
And a lot of things he says pertain to the conversation that we just had.
Awesome. Well, yeah.
He include Bowie in this. So.
Well, he was
rip that audio and throw it in.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Later.
Bye.
Well, folks, that just about does it for today's episode of Back to the Fire. I hope everybody enjoyed it. If you did or if you didn't, let me know. If you've got ideas for future shows, go ahead and shoot that over to me, too. If you are the idea for the future show, if you want to be on the show, let me know that, too. I'm always looking for new folks to talk to. So, I checked out that clip that Nabi was talking about, and yeah, Bowie, I think, was pretty spot on with his ideas of what the internet was becoming and has become, continues to be. So I've decided to include that little bit at the tail end of this, so that's gonna sort of play us out. Until next time, be well.
Here, the American records. There was no MTV, and there was no, it wasn't sort of wall-to-wall blanket music. And so therefore it had a kind of a call-to-arms kind of feeling to it. This is the thing that will change things. This is a dead dodgy occupation to have. It's still, produced signs of horror from people if you said, I'm in rock and roll. It's, my goodness. Now it's a career opportunity. And the internet is now, carries the flag of being subversive and possibly rebellious and chaotic, nihilistic, and oh yes it is. Forget about the Microsoft element. The monopolies do not have a monopoly, maybe on programs.
What you like about it is the fact that anyone can say anything or do anything.
From my standpoint, from where I am, because of the by virtue of the fact that I am a pop singer,
yeah,
and writer, I embrace the idea that there's a new demystification process going on between the artist and the audience. I think when you look back at, say, this last decade, there hasn't really been one single entity, artist or group, that have personified or become the brand name for the 90s. It was starting to fade a little in the 80s, and in the 70s there were still definite artists, in the 60s there were the Beatles and the Hendrix, and in the 50s, there was Presley. Now it's subgroups and genres. It's hip-hop. It's girl power. It's a communal kind of thing. Mm. It's about the community. It's becoming more and more about the audience. Because the point of having somebody who led the forces has disappeared because the vocabulary of rock is too well known. It's a currency that is not, it's not devoid of meaning anymore, but it's certainly only a conveyor of information now. It's not a conveyor of rebellion. And the internet has taken on that, as I say. And so I find that a terribly exciting area. So from my standpoint, being an artist, I like to see what the new construction is between artist and audience. There is a breakdown. There's a personified, I think, by the rave culture of the last few years, where the audience is at least as important as whoever is playing at the rave. It's almost like the artist is to accompany the audience and what the audience are doing. And that feeling is very much permeating music and permeating the internet.
But what is it specifically about the internet? I mean, anybody can say anything.
Yeah.
And it all adds up to what? I mean, it seems to me There's nothing cohesive about it in the way that there was something cohesive about the youth revolution in music.
Oh, but absolutely. And because I think that we, at the time, up until at least the mid-70s, really felt that we were still living under the... in the guise of a single and absolute created society, where there were known truths and known lies, and there was no kind of duplicity or pluralism about the things that we believed in. That started to break down rapidly in the 70s, and the idea of a duality in the way that we live, in there are always 2, 3, 4, 5 sides to every question, that the singularity disappeared. And that, I believe, has produced such a medium as the internet, which absolutely establishes and shows us that we are living in total fragmentation.
You don't think that some of the claims being made for it are hugely exaggerated? I mean, when the telephone was invented, people made amazing claims.
I know,
the
president,
for example.
The president at the time, when it was first invented, he was outrageous. He said he foresaw the day in the future when every town in America would have a telephone. Now that, what? How dare he claim like that? Absolute bullshit. No, you see, I don't agree. I think the internet, I don't think we've even seen the tip of the iceberg. I think the potential of what the internet is going to do to society, both good and bad, is unimaginable. I think we're actually on the cusp of something exhilarating and terrifying.
It's just a tool, though, isn't it?
No, it's not. No. No, it's an alien life form.
What do you think, I mean, when you think then about...
Is there life on Mars? Yes, it's just landed here.
But that's, yeah. It's simply a different delivery system there. You're arguing about something more profound.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about the actual context and the state of content is going to be so different to anything that we can really envisage at the moment. Where the interplay between the user and the provider will be so... in simpatico, it's going to crush our ideas of what mediums are all about. But it's happening in every form. Mm-hmm. It's happening in visual art. The breakthroughs at the early part of the century with people like Duchamp, who were so prescient in what they were doing and putting down. The idea that the piece of work is not finished until the audience come to it and add their own interpretation, and what the piece of art is about is the grey space in the middle. That grey space in the middle is what the 21st century is going to be about.